Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
But what? The third hit on Google. 10 Starscream coats useful in the workplace. Waka waka waka.
I did a transformer.
Before boys began, there was the lore. We know not where it comes from, but know that it has the power to create nerds. So Lore Boys here, the internet's number one fake history podcast. I am your prime, Peter O'Donoghue, and I am joined by...
Ethan Bot online.
James, and I'll explode probably 10 times this episode. That's the first one. Yeah,
there's one. We got one down.
Yeah.
So today's beautiful disaster was request for Michael Bay's Transformers specifically comes from patrons Sarah and David last name withheld, along with the Welfare Queen's Coughing Cat and Forest Temple. So thank you, and welcome to our newest patron, Panacea.
Yeah. Welcome, Panacea.
Yeah. The patrons all used to be one. Back in the day, it was called Panacea, and over time they split apart, and now
eventually broke apart. Yeah,
54 patrons. Yeah, into 54 parts.
Well, it depends on how you define a patron. In the same way, it depends on how you define a continent, right?
Right.
Because North and South America are only divided by the Panama Canal, which is man-made.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So
the same thing with Africa and the Asian continent, because the Suez Canal is in Egypt and that area? The Suez Canal is also man-made.
Asia's always way bigger than I expect it to be.
I mean, it's big. Some would say it's the biggest of the continent.
Yeah, like the Middle East.
It depends
East.
On how you define a continent.
Middle East is in Asia, isn't it?
Yeah.
In it?
Yeah, what's it to you?
Who's asking?
Yeah, I don't know. I just never thought of the Middle East as being in Asia until recently, I guess.
Where'd you think of it being?
The Middle East. I don't know. Somewhere else.
Middle East
Earth.
Yeah, I don't know. Where is Russia? Europe? Or is that Asia?
Russia is mostly Asia.
Yeah.
But geopolitically, pretty European.
Culturally, most of the big cities are very close to Europe because of where they're located. And then you've got a lot like Canada. It's got its own, different people out and further north. But also, Russia is, broadly uninhabited, just like Canada is, because it's there's no animals and no plants and nothing.
Yeah, 50% of the Canadian population lives within a 1-hour drive to the American border.
I think it's higher than that.
Yeah,
it might be higher.
Stupid. Oh no, 50% of the population is below the Canadian and American border that goes across the middle, because we dip down there where Toronto and everything is.
If you take the average latitude of the border and you average it out, it's over half the population lives south of the Canadian US border average, essentially. That's just a weird way that the lines were drawn at some point. By weird, it's because they followed the St. Lawrence River.
I blew up.
Oh, we got two.
Oh, there's your first explosion. Good.
So, this second explosion.
Jeez, Jamie Peter. Clearly is familiar, but lads, have you seen the Michael Bay Transformers movies?
Is that the Megan Fox Shia LaBeouf?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen at least the first couple.
Yeah, I've seen. I said it before the show. I've seen definitely the first one several times. Almost certainly the second one, and probably the third one.
Okay.
Definitely not any of the ones past that.
Whenever. The first one came out, and I was just a young teenager, I think, at this point. I thought Megan Fox was the most beautiful girl in the world. I thought she was so pretty.
Yeah, she, I mean, still is.
Yeah.
A very beautiful girl. she was pretty cool and talented for a while and then kind of went crazy and now drinks Machine Gun Kelly's blood.
What?
Yeah.
I missed that whole arc. Okay.
It's recent. I can't remember where I saw it, but yeah, it's just like, oh yeah, like one, she's with Machine Gun Kelly.
Yeah.
And then two, apparently they semi-regularly consume each other's blood, I guess. And it's not even like him getting his Red Wings sort of situation, like straight up drink their blood.
I remember having a movie night with my family and we're all sitting crammed into the living room and there's that scene where she's like working on the car, like leaned over the hood or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I hope my parents aren't looking at me right now because I'm getting too much out of looking at this movie.
Boy, yeah,
exactly.
James' eyes just like popping out of his head, and, like, rolls out of his mouth, hits the floor, then rolls across the floor.
Yeah, I'm stomping.
TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the you hit yourself in the head with the shoe. You're that cartoon wolf.
Yeah.
Pan Am
did it to us all again later, right?
From Cyberpunk?
Yeah, she did the lean over the car thing, too. Yep.
Yeah.
And those are the two times in history that shot has ever been used to exploit a woman's
bottom.
I think we're done as a society. The exploitation of women.
Get out of here!
I think my first Awooga was American Pie, which... my buddy's parents had rented on VHS, and we weren't supposed to watch it, but his parents were gone. I was like, six or seven.
You said your first Awooga. Are you talking about your first boner?
Yeah. Well, Jamie was talking about it.
Well, that wasn't my first one.
He praised it as his first boner.
Wasn't my first one, but I thought
I was watching Transformers with my parents, and it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Maybe I was talking about the first time my eyes popped out of my head, and my tongue rolled across Adrian's carpet.
Yeah.
Right?
Jamie's parents saw that he was coveting a woman and cut off his genitals. So it was not his first, but was his last.
I've been pure ever since. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Jamie's been a eunuch this whole time.
And he has the voice of an angel.
Yep.
Yeah, his voice never cracked because they castrated him when he got horny and transformed.
No lie, had a really high voice when I was a kid. Like, I'm not a eunuch. Spoilers, but
they just cut off the dick. They left the balls.
in my grade 8 like Christmas play, I got the lead solo singing part over all the girls because I could hit the notes. And I won the music award that year, and Ethan won the acting award. That was very cool.
Yep.
Yeah,
very cute.
Look at us now,
Artie boys.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've always had a soft spot for the Transformers movies because, like, with my antenna at home, one of the few shows that I could catch on air, like on literal air, was Beast Wars. And, like, kind of as I've aged, I've refined my palate a bit, and, like, none of the Transformers movies are good, but I really like the first and the third ones. And I think if I had the time, you could edit both down into a single good film because there's a lot of good concepts that, like, are on screen for 20 seconds, and then Jamie explodes for a third time. There we go, thank you.
Shit.
Yeah. So, like, there's really good bases for characters, and very good basis for fiction, and very good, like, it's good Transformers, it's just buried, right? Like, under a lot of that. And also, like, working in VFX now has, like, kind of given me a newer appreciation. Because there was, like, a period of time where I was like, well, I can't believe I like those. But then I worked with guys who have worked on those films. Or, like, work in CG and admire them as, like, VFX art. I do have a new appreciation. Like, I know the first CG suit I ever worked with was just like, oh, yeah, you like Transformers? Because I have one on my desk at the office. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, that scene where the worm, like, constricts this. There's this giant mechanical fucking worm in the third movie. And it just, like, constricts this building. And it's, like, chewing through it and all the paper and glass is falling down. He's like, did you know that took, like, 10 hours per frame to render? It rendered for a month and a half. Wow. And I'm like, wow. Well, like, one, that's insane. And two, it's kind of geeky that you're into that. Like, yeah, we rendered a single shot for a month and a half.
I don't know if I have seen the third one. If it's got worms in it. I never watch movies with worms.
Huh. Yeah, that's true. What about Tremors? You never watched Tremors?
I've never seen Tremors, no. It's got worms in it, Peter. Didn't I just fucking say that I don't watch movies with worms?
Just in case.
You know what? Yeah, surprising we didn't run into more worms in another... what's that guy's name? Lead character in... Shia LaBeouf. Why didn't we have more worms and holes? There's a lot of holes.
You know? Oh, because they had them spotted lizards.
Oh, true.
Out in the desert.
Yeah, spotted lizards catch all the worms. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. They say the early spotted lizard gets the worm.
Yeah, that was one of the required reading in I think grade 5 or something. Holes.
Yeah,
was one group. And then
I remember it was like the kid from Even Stevens was in Holes, and then after that he was in Transformers, and I still knew him as Even Stevens.
Yeah, yeah. I forget what my point was, but
the other group, not the Holes.
Yeah. Oh, it's in the other group. Yeah. I think we read The Hatchet or Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Either one.
I had to read all three of those because I read Hatchet as well, and I did like it.
I like The Hatchet.
Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Isn't that the second one? It'd be weird if you had to read that one.
No, is that not the first
one? Prince Caspian's the first one.
Oh, okay.
Prince Caspian. I
never read Prince Caspian.
I remember it was assigned reading, but I had like
the Magician's Nephew is the first one.
Oh, is it? Prince Caspian's the third?
Prince Caspian's the third, maybe. Oh, no, it looks like it is The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. Magician's Nephew's like the last one. No wonder when I tried to read them when I was young, The Magician's Nephew didn't make any sense to me, and I never finished reading the series.
Yeah.
I started with the sixth book.
I had all six books or however many they are in one giant book. So I had like this huge
tome. Like a tome?
Yeah, that I would carry around. And I thought I was so cool. I'm like, I won't use the school issued one. I'll just flip halfway through my book and read from my book. So yeah.
I'll just read in a much more inconvenient way.
Exactly. Yeah.
One of those nerds. I saw a girl get on the subway a couple days ago. And she was clearly a celloist because she had a cello with her, but she was like a 5'5 little Asian girl, and her cello was like
cellist.
Is it a cellist?
I think it's cellist.
Yeah. Regardless, she was wheeling around a cello that was twice her height, and I was just like, man, I'd hate to be you. Just like struggling so much, and no one was helping her. And I didn't want to be the guy to do it because I was just kind of laughing at her.
That's one of those instruments. It's either so beautiful when you hear it or so god awful. Like
any of those like high tension strings, like violin too. Yeah. Like learning violin is like the most painful experience ever, but can just produce the most beautiful sounds. Like,
Yeah.
There was a fiddle at the bar we were at last night.
Yeah, my dad was really into it. He was like taking up half the aisle because it's like pretty much a hallway the bar we're in, and he's like sitting in a chair just like in the middle, and everybody had to like go sideways to get around him. But he was just like,
Bobby's a big fella too.
Yeah,
such a classic Bob power move.
And he's just clapping. I'm like, I kept asking him, like, Dad, do you want to switch with me? Because you can be on the bench. Yeah, the bench is comfortable. He's a big guy, you know. Chair's probably a little too small for him, but no, he planned it from the beginning because he knows there's music and he wanted to have a bird's eye view.
A line of sight.
A bird's eye view. Yeah, birds notorious for standing in the middle of somewhere and just
and sitting below the weeds, so he's got to like peer through the crowd of people to see.
Yeah,
it.
Maybe I meant a penguin
feathers.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, your dad wanted a penguin's eye view of the live music, right?
It's the bird's eye view of the spotted lizard who's currently catching the worm. That's what their view is at that moment.
So one last thing regarding VFX, because one of the things I do know about Michael Bay, especially talking about people who have worked with him now, he knows what the movie is supposed to look like at the end, which is a problem with a lot of directors these days, because Hollywood is pumping out so much content that like it's not your imagination. Movies do look worse and are written worse because they're being produced in such high quantities that there aren't enough people to actually do the work. So, like, Transformers it came out in 2007. It does look better than anything that's come out recently. Still, it still holds up. And that's because the guy making it knew what it was gonna look like, and I won't name names. I worked with a few directors who have no fucking idea what VFX is. They think it takes an afternoon to just copy paste an image over an actor, basically.
Wait, it doesn't, you're saying?
It takes dozens of people a few days to finish a shot.
I remember listening to an interview about that Tony Stark dude. He was just tired of wearing the mask. He's like, I don't want to act in this thing, so you know what? Just CG it on my face. And just added a bunch of work for them because he didn't want to wear a mask during the...
Yeah, and also I've definitely criticized it before. This is not like a movie that anyone I know has worked on, but like in The Avengers, when Tony gets his liquid metal Iron Man suit, looks like shit. Looked like shit the day it came out. It looks worse than the first Iron Man movie where it was like hard panels, but like yeah, his the like slime that coats him, and because he didn't want to wear the helmet anymore, looks terrible.
Oh, I don't know why this reminded me. Guys, we should all get Goat Simulator 3 and play it together. It looks so...
I don't know why that reminded you either.
Well, because it's slime. Getting covered in slime, there's you can be a pig, and you can just basically turn yourself into like a layer of pig shit over you or all the other people that you're with.
Okay.
It looks just so fun like to play as a group. You just wander around and collect collectibles, and just ridiculous shit happens, and it looks so fun.
I remember in the first Goat Simulator, the giraffe was known as the tall goat, and that is still one of the funniest things I have ever seen.
It looks so ridiculous. I watched like 5 minutes of someone streaming it, and I was laughing so much.
I think it's on Game Pass. I mean, I'm down to fuck around with it.
We should do it. Yeah. Okay.
And then before we get into the shit here, and before we turn ourselves into pig shit for the rest of the episode, the final gush I would like to give to the Transformers films is the score and the audio overall. Steve Jablonski's music is incredible and is just like fantastic movie music. And the audio of the Transformers like transforming.
Yeah. Was that it?
All the like clinking and clanking and all the mechanical stuff is brilliant. Like it's just there's like again there's good little parts squirreled away in there, but it's very much like I don't know if you guys ever had like the glued together sand that you could chisel a plastic dinosaur skeleton out of toy sort of thing.
No,
that's cool. You would love that.
I did love it. It's the good parts of the Transformers franchise, at least the Michael Bay ones, is the plastic T-Rex skeleton at the center of the dirt brick that you buy at a hobby store, basically.
Okay, gotcha.
I think that would be my review of the five films.
A spinning review from Peter O'Donoghue. Yeah, exactly. Ringing endorsement. Yeah.
Two dirt bricks, way up, said Roger Ebert. So what happens in the continuity? The guys writing these films, sure as shit, had no fucking idea. Everything was made up on the fly. Like, on the day, they made it up because Mikey needed a new Transformers script to start shooting. So what I'm going to do is actually, instead of going in chronological order, we're going to go in the order the films came out that we can insert the retcons and not give these people any kind of credit for planning this whole thing out like we would in a normal episode.
Okay, sure.
Okay. So every story needs a little convenience. During the planet-wide civil war on the Transformers homeworld of Cybertron, and we do have previous episodes where we talk about some more, like, legitimate Transformers fiction. This one kind of picks and chooses whatever the fuck it wants. Like, the Michael Bay movies also, like, the characters' names broadly mean nothing. It's just, like, a name that was on a sheet, and Mr. Bay probably pointed at one and then pointed at a vehicle he wanted to turn into because he had a deal with GM, and that was the end of the conversation.
Right? Bada boom, bada bing.
Johnny Race Car. That one?
Ka-chow. Are the cars from Cars Transformers?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's part of the canon. But that's before they got their robot forms. So the Transformers homeworld is cars.
Okay, yeah.
So, Cybertron is in the whatever the Nevada desert.
Was it the Transformers episode that you guys said I'd like to fuck cars way back?
Yeah.
I think
You said you liked it.
Yeah.
You brought it up and we latched onto it real hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fact that you love fucking cars.
No, I
we bought pornhubcaps.com and then we let it go, I think, at some point.
I clearly remember never saying that I love to fuck cars, but you just saying I love to fuck cars.
That doesn't sound right. Sounds like you said something that heavily implied and your true love for fucking cars.
Throughout the episode, like now, I was angry at first.
I'm still angry now, turns out. Yeah.
Yeah, no. But by the end, I embraced it. The Pornhub caps was my idea, so... It's fine.
Yeah, and I did love having that URL for the time that we had it. anyway, the war on Cybertron that consumed the entire planet, the civil war between the two factions, the Autobots and the Decepticons, still canon. On the homeworld of Cybertron, there was a life-giving cube called the Allspark, although colloquially they just call it the Cube. And to protect it from Megatron... Optimus and the Autobots just blindly launched it into space.
If we don't know where it is, they can't torture us to find out where it is.
Exactly. Yeah. No amount of Cybertronian waterboarding will get the answer, right?
I know you said we're not giving them any free credit, but we'll give them that Lore Boys canon that it was exactly waterboarded with motor oil.
Yeah, I was trying to think, like, what is the waterboard equivalent? Yeah. Just
like the slowest. It's
so job. Thick, yeah.
Or what if they keep their gas tanks like completely empty, but like put in a drop just at a time, so they can keep running, but they never feel like they're able to.
They get a tube that runs like through the engine, like through the pistons, and then like all the way back to the gas tank, and they feed you through that. They run the gas all the way through that.
Yeah,
it's very uncomfortable. Yeah,
they hate it.
You got like the. No, never mind. I'm not gonna do that one. Actually, too dark.
just jamming, you know, the when you're leaving like a parking lot or whatever, and they have like the tire poppers if you like leave in the wrong direction or you like
enter where you're not supposed to.
They have those, and they're like just jamming them. They're not popping the tires, but they're just jamming them like in the area between the tires and the rim.
Ooh.
Oh, like, yeah, it's like hitting it under your fingernails.
Yeah, like the bamboo under your fingernails.
Oh yeah. Just open up the hood. Open up the hood and just handful of sand into everything, you know, like see if you can get like some grits. Yeah,
like tapping the bamboo like between the like the door and the window, basically. Yeah. Talk, tell us where it is. So after launching of the EQ blindly into space, Megatron, the leader of the Decepticons, somehow found out where it was, and he had wanted it because it does create Transformers life. We see in the first film that. If Shia the Beast dumbass drops it, it'll just like send out this pulse that brings a bunch of machines to life. So there's like a Mountain Dew robot and a blender robot and right, like that sort of thing. Like how it works is whatever. It just does Transformers.
It's like a Panini perfect. Press robot in one of them, isn't there?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in the second one,
what?
Sam like drops a piece of it and like. All the appliances in his kitchen come to life.
Yeah.
So there's like there's a blender, a vacuum, a Panini press. There's a microwave. There's a little phone, little bug phone thing, basically.
I want a Panini press. I think I'm going to get a Panini press.
Peter wants a bug phone, FBI, if you're listening.
Yeah. So, Megatron wanted to use it to create, create more robots on Cybertron. Like, whatever. He wanted to use it to, like, create an army, basically.
Cool.
Eventually... the cube, after being launched blindly into space, the cube crash landed on Earth about 12,000 years ago in 10,000 BC, and this sets up the first film. So like I said, like every story, every plot needs a little bit of contrivance, and this one is fine, because like, why are the Transformers on Earth in the first place? Well, luck, basically.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so Megatron at some point decided that he was going to track it down himself, and located it. Basically, based on his energy signature. However, when he came into Earth's atmosphere, he was pulled into the gravity, which disoriented him for some reason, and then he crashed into the Arctic, which knocked him out, and then he froze.
I remember that part.
Right.
Exactly.
That's how it starts, they're like digging him up.
Sorry?
That's how it starts. They're like digging him up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Pete did with his little dinosaur and his crusty sand thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now we've got three blocks of compressed sand, and how many explosions, Jamie?
Four.
Let's go.
you gotta start pacing those explosions, dude. I feel like
we're
to the opening scene of the first of five movies, and already four in.
Podcast wise, we're 22, almost 23 minutes. Four seems about right. I'm aiming for five for 30. You know, and if we go long,
you're going by time, not by Pete's script. Pete's notoriously long scripts.
Yeah,
well, we'll see.
Yeah. Don't worry, I got five movies in here. So, an unknown of time after Megatron crashed, in 1897, Archibald Witwicky would stumble across Megatron's frozen body. Within the film, Archibald is said to be an explorer, and judging by his own dialogue, he and his 41 sailors wanted to reach the Arctic Circle. I don't want to split hairs kind of this early into the film's lore, but wanting to reach the Arctic Circle isn't really a real thing because it isn't a place. The Arctic Circle is the southernmost latitudinal line on Earth where in the winter and in the summer, the solstices and during the solstices, the sun never sets for an entire day and never comes up for an entire day.
Okay.
So the Arctic Circle is just it, you, it's a- anywhere you want it to be on the planet, basically.
Have you guys seen the Northern Lights IRL?
I have, yeah, because I lived in Kujawak.
Wait, what do you mean it's anywhere you want it to be on the planet? That doesn't make sense.
I mean, in the loop that it's got, like within its own latitude. Sorry. like,
Wait a minute. So for our reference, it's like halfway down Hudson's Bay, essentially.
Yeah. Oh.
It's like where it starts.
Where about Thunder Bay?
Nowhere near Thunder
Jesus?
Bay.
No.
Doesn't even get close to Thunder Bay.
Oh, that's good. Thunder Bay killed Terry Fox, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, he was assassinated by Thunder Bay.
Yeah. Americans don't know who Terry Fox is, by the way. I learned this in WoW.
Really?
Only Canadians know.
Oh, why would they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't name a famous jogger from the U.S. either, so like that's fair.
What's her face? Caitlyn Jenner. You absolutely can.
That's like an Olympian. That's a different thing.
There was an Olympian that my grade 7 and 8 or gym teacher taught me about that was American, but I can't remember his name now. Too bad.
Was it Hercules?
No, it was a guy. Some guy was just really good at running.
Love that movie.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, like within the film's fiction, it's not explained why Archibald Witwicky was trying to reach the Arctic Circle, which again, like I said, doesn't really mean anything. Maybe they were like trying to reference the multiple explorers that had tried and failed to explore the Northwest Passage, which was a theoretical trade route that you could go from the east coast of the east coast of North America north and over to get to Asia that way, basically. Like maybe they were referencing it because it was popular, but like by the time that the Witwickys were trying to explore the northern Canada, the Franklin expedition had already gone up and disappeared with the Erebus and the Terror like decades prior to that. So like people knew it was there, it had been mapped out, so like why he was trying is unknown. Also, I want to give a nice lore boys shout out to Big Man Climate Change, because until 2009, there was too much ice to actually still reliably go through the Northwest Passage. So we've had 13 good years of shipping plastic to Japan. So thank God.
Exactly. Go ahead.
I just had to look this up because I was like, do planes fly over the poles sometimes, or do we just go left, right? And they do. There's transpolar flights. There's a ton of them.
Definitely not the South Pole, right?
It looks like the North Pole I'm looking at, yeah.
There's no way you fly over
the South Pole. Well, I don't think the fastest way to get from, like, Argentina to South Africa is to fly.
I don't know much about
to Australia, maybe?
I don't know much about the Southern. I spend, like, pretty much my whole life in the Northern Hemisphere. I don't think I've ever been to the Southern Hemisphere.
Argentina, Buenos Aires to Perth. Does fly over Antarctica.
That's
not over the
really?
Pole, not over the pole per se. Kind of a circuitous route around the edges of Antarctica. You probably don't want to fly over Antarctica just because if you crash, like, you're definitely dead.
Yeah.
Like, like if the crash doesn't get you,
the ice desert will. The fact is minus 85.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is great. So I Googled Argentina to Australia flight path. So I was curious about the question that we were talking about. I see this one image that has like a bunch of lines flying like from like Madagascar to New Zealand and Tasmania, and they're all kind of going over Antarctica. And then a big letter says, "These flight routes do not exist." And then I see the subject is "Flat Earth: Are Australia to South America flights real?" It's just very, very. Thanks, Google, for putting that right at the top for me.
I think I found one of the south. God. Yeah, it doesn't go right over it. Like you said, it goes around.
It's literally like
it there. It's I the got third this
one that shows the Buenos Aires to Perth one, and then all the related content ones are all like flat Earth. Like this is debunked. This is make believe.
Yeah, thanks, Google.
It's cool.
What do they think it is? Do they think there's like 150 hours to fly from Buenos Aires to Perth? In that case, it's like...
they think that all flights are shorter, but they waste time. Like all flights will waste time in the air to make it seem like they're longer, to like maintain the illusion. Again, it's every single pilot in the world is also in on the conspiracy.
That's so fucking stupid.
More people are in on the conspiracy than are out of the conspiracy. So.
Yeah, can we go? Let's pick up Flight Simulator and just figure it out for ourselves.
It's on Game Pass. I did the Ottawa to Montreal a bunch of times. It was great.
Yeah, and you waited up in the air for an extra hour because...
Well, obviously, to keep up the ruse, I played the game for 6.5 hours to get from Ottawa to Montreal, which is like a 41-minute flight, right?
Yeah. 41-minute flight, assuming there's a curvature to the Earth, you idiot.
I know. I'm sorry. Yeah, I know I've been talking a bunch of mad shit about the latitude and the lines around the Earth. Like, it's all fake. It's all Transformers bullshit.
Your cat's, like, bugging out back there. He's licking himself.
Mine is?
No.
Oh, no, mine is, yeah.
He's, like, right staring there at the light. She's staring.
Yeah, she'll do that. Yeah, she's an idiot. She's an animal with a little head and a tiny brain inside.
Very cute.
Anyway, small head, so... Smaller brain. Yeah, a small head, smaller brain, exactly. That's me. So yeah, Megatron had crashed at some point in the Arctic and was discovered by accident by Archibald Witwicky when the ship was stuck in the pack ice. Basically, some ice collapsed. He fell into a cave that had Megatron's body inside of it. Megatron briefly activated for like a couple of seconds when Archibald had touched his hand, and his navigation system like kind of lasered out of his eyes and then burned the coordinates into Archibald's glasses. So he had carved in like Cybertronian runes into the glasses he was wearing at the time, also blinding him. And then when he got back, I guess they abandoned the expedition. When he got back, he had been talking about how he had found a demon or something like that. So the government took away his glasses and gave them to his son and put him in a loony bin where he just would rant and rave about the giant mechanical monster that he had discovered in the Arctic.
Cool. Crazy people don't deserve glasses. I've always said it.
That's why I haven't ordered it.
Yeah.
Before the show, we were talking, and I was like, "Oh, I definitely saw the first one and the second one, I think, but I like won't remember any of it until you mentioned it." As soon as you said Witwicky, I was like, "Oh yeah, there was like Ben Franklin's spectacles or something with like coordinates burned onto it."
That's National Treasure. It's so amazing. Yeah,
pretty much. But that's it. It's like pretty much the story of National Treasure, just with robots, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, mm-hmm. National Treasure also is. Like, unequivocally good, too. Like, it's a good Nicolas Cage movie. It's a great adventure movie. Bad. They're both great. I love them.
It was bad.
I've
watched it relatively recently because Ariane, my wife, really likes it, but...
She's right!
Watched it was in, like, the dorm rooms, like, in the shared area, and it was just a bunch of college kids laughing at this movie because we all thought it was so bad, but...
It's a good, summer blockbuster. Like, Jerry Bruckheimer was a good producer, Nick Cage does a great job, and it's like convoluted nonsense. John Voight is in that movie and in Transformers, so like they're two peas in a pod, really. So after locking him up, this is Archibald, not John Voight. John Voight is, as far as I know, alive and well and unincarcerated. The U.S. government figured they'd follow up on the demon sightings in the Arctic, basically, so they talked to by this point, the 30-year-old Canada to just be like, "Hey, guys, can we check what's in the attic, basically? Mm-hmm. Just in case. We had a crazy man talking about a demon. We're just going to take a look.
And we're just going to invade your soil to see if you guys are storing a demon up there."
Exactly. Yeah.
We had invaded the soil like 30 years earlier than that, so I guess...
No, not 30 years, like hundreds of years earlier. It's just Confederation was in the 1860s.
We were Britain. It was still England whenever...
Yeah. We were the Dominion of Canada.
I saw a funny reel, and it's like the theme for Shark Tank playing, and a guy walks up with a briefcase, and he's like, "We'll take 100% of your land for zero equity."
Yeah, you sent me that.
Boom, boom. Yeah, exactly.
And he had like the colonial tricorn and like the long coat, like 12 white buttons across the front.
Yeah, yeah. If only it was that peaceful and
great coat though.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Yeah. So the government would eventually find Megatron and begin reverse engineering many of Earth's technologies off of him. So in the film, Agent Seymour Simmons, that everything we use today was based off of Megatron's body. He names microchips, lasers, spaceflight, and cars. Most of this is fine for sci-fi engineering, except for the fact that the car had been invented like 30 years prior to that in Germany.
It was only known as the automobile at that time.
Yeah, of course, yes.
Nobody was calling them cars yet.
No, Toad had his motor car, of course, right?
Yeah.
Or Frog and Toad, whatever that one is.
I didn't know Germany was first on that.
Yeah, it was Mr. Benz of Mercedes-Benz fame. Had the patent for the motor car was in 1886, so okay. 13 years ahead of the discovery of Megatron.
The one I remembered is just like the one that got popularized because it was like made on an assembly line, so it was cheap enough for the average Joe to buy.
The Model T?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the Ford, yeah. Yeah, no, the patent itself for a, like, the internal combustion engine, like a vehicle powered by a gas engine, was patented by Carl Benz in 1886.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, they stumble a little bit here with the fiction in the fact that it's like, yeah, man, we reverse engineered everything off of Megatron's body. Except for the fact the cars already existed and had existed for almost 15 years. Like, maybe they made some improvements to it, like Megatron had, like, airbags or something. Then that was the part that they took from him.
Yeah.
So the cube that had been launched into space was first discovered by the American government in 1913. And it's in the Southwest. The U.S. government under Herbert Hoover built the Hoover Dam around it, which is kind of ridiculous for the fact that this, and if you've seen the movie, you know it's like the size of a building. So this gigantic alien cube had just been sitting in the American Southwest for like millennia, and the U.S. had no idea it was there until 1913.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then in the 2100s, there'd be the battle for Hoover Dam, because I've been playing that game lately.
Yeah, in New Vegas, of course. Yes. Yeah. It's when you want to stop Caesar's Legion from getting the cube and creating more Roman Transformers.
Yeah.
Obviously.
The automaton. It's the automatons that shut down the Legion, isn't it? But if you go with Mr. Yes Man.
Mr. House?
Yeah, Mr. House. Yeah, that's it.
Mr. Iceman?
Yeah, I forgot his name. No, I said Yes Man. I forgot. Who's Yes Man in his house? Yeah.
Yes Man's the robot.
Yeah.
Right. He's the robot companion that Mr. House sent to dig you up out of the grave that the courier or that Benny left you in, I think.
Yeah.
Doesn't he get replaced? Because it's the guy he has the cowboy on his TV screen is the guy who digs you up.
Yeah. But then once you get to New Vegas, it's revealed that he's not just cowboy. He also Securitron or whatever. He's like a security guy face, and then he shows Mr. House's face too. You can show all these faces.
Yeah. Because he's like Alabama Slim or something. And then he gets turned into Yes Man when he gets overwritten, and then the voice actor changes to one of the kids in the hall.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think it's the little guy with the weird teeth. Also, the new kids in the hall on Amazon Prime, pretty good.
Is it? Huh.
They're old. There's nudity. Like, if you ever wanted to see, whatever, Kevin McDonald's dick, it's on Amazon.
That's where you go.
You know where to go now.
Yeah, if you've ever wanted to see the alien secretary from Lilo and Stitch's penis, it's on Amazon Prime now. So nice. Fucking go for it. So in 1931, President Hoover had the Hoover Dam built around the cube to hide his energy because they could detect it in some capacity. I guess like they could like early radiation detection or whatever. But since they already knew about Megatron up north and recognized like some of the metallic details, the thing that he was made out of, and some of the Cybertronian runes, they're like, yeah, okay, like I can see a pattern. Two things the same.
Yeah. Basically. Two things same make pattern.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Megatron was moved and stored in the Hoover Dam in 1934. And he would eventually be called like in the files NBE-1, which is non-biological entity 1.
Okay.
Other Cybertronians somehow learned of the location of the cube, possibly due to Megatron leaving like a post-it behind or maybe telling people where he'd gone. So Starscream, Megatron's second in command, who turns into a fighter jet, would arrive on Earth at some point.
His Barricade. Voice is the best. His voice in the old cartoons, it's just like shrieking.
Megatron!
Yeah, exactly.
In the Michael Bay movie, in the first one, he has a single line of dialogue. He does not say anything else. He says, I live to serve you, Lord Megatron. Or I guess he has two lines. Yeah, he says, I live to serve you, Lord Megatron. Then Megatron asks where the cube is, and he says, the humans have taken it. Okay. And that's it. He does not say anything for the rest of the movie.
That's an easy gig.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh yeah, two lines of dialogue, and the voice actor was probably paid, like, to be in, like, a Michael Bay movie. Like, $15,000 or something stupid, right?
Nice.
Okay, I just looked up at a Starscream dialogue, because I was curious. I vaguely remember them being like asking for like a roll call or whatever, and people like checking in. But I think it was the Autobots, not the Decepticons, so it must have been somebody else that I'm thinking of. But what the third hit on Google? 10 Starscream coats useful in the workplace.
Hit me. Give me one.
From the Transformers 1984, More Than Meets the Eye, Part 3. It's time for action, not words. I am the leader of the future.
Say that in a meeting. Yeah, that's a good idea. Wow.
Again, from the show, a Decepticon Raider in King Arthur's Court is the episode. Faster, you malingering peasants.
That's a great one.
Good for us managers.
Yeah,
for
sure. I'm going to use that one, yeah.
We got the Transformers the movie from 1986. Do I have a second on that? And the context is... Starscream, being the opportunistic weasel that he is, saw a chance to overthrow a seriously injured Megatron by suggesting all near-death Decepticons be jettisoned into space so that healthy Decepticons can save themselves. So then I guess he's looking for someone to second him on this idea to, like, like, discard the wounded. Transformers Prime 2011, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Classic quote.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever said anything close to that in the workplace. Like,
I wouldn't credit that one to Starscream either. I think normal people say that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, you could say it, but I feel like I don't actually say anything like that. Or, I don't know.
I think Alfred Hitchcock said it in The Birds. He was talking to one of the birds. He said, "Hey, bird, scratch my back. I'll scratch yours."
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I believe you.
Why would you scratch a bird?
You pat him.
It's itchy.
Oh.
Transformers the show, Auto Berserk the episode, you would be supreme. Not sure. Flattery will get you flattened, vermin. Again, these are for the workplace, guys.
Yeah, so these are for the workplace. Wow.
Don't think about using these at a party.
When you're driving your forklift recklessly, looking at both your hands and not using the steering wheel, you can just be like, "Flattery will get you flattened," and then
or say, "Faster, you malingering peasants," and then ram into a person who's not on a forklift.
Yes, even better.
You do that.
Yeah, we got one from the Michael Bay movies here, from The Fall of Cybertron. I hear this is where all the idiots hang out. That's a great one to say.
I'm going to say that next time I join a fucking meeting. That's a funny one. Yeah.
There's a "Don't Start With Me, Woman," which, again, I won't credit Starscream on that. More problematic today than it was when he said it in 2008.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
And then finally, one that I actually do think I say at work, which is just, I'm stupid.
Okay, that one happened.
Oh yeah, I've seen that one because I've seen a couple episodes of the old show, and Megatron's like kicking the shit out of him, and he's just like, "You like, why did you betray me? You're either treacherous or stupid." He's like groveling for peace. He's like, "I'm stupid."
Oh so, yeah, boom bang! That's another explosion that makes fog.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, Starscream was already on Earth. Also, one of the nice little details in the first movie is the Decepticons use the same, they have like a hologram of a person in the vehicle that they've turned into, and it's always the same guy. It is just like a middle-aged white guy with a mustache. So the helicopter pilot, the police officer, the fighter jet pilot, they're all the same dude, and it's like pretty interesting. They just like scanned one guy and they're like, "Good enough," and then they just all use the exact same person.
What's the story of that guy, I wonder?
Yeah, I wish I could have done an episode on hologram guy from Transformers. So yeah, Starscream turns into a jet. Barricade turns into a police car. Brawl is a tank. Bone Crusher is something called a buffalo mine clearing vehicle. It's like this armored vehicle with like a arm on it that has a big fork, and it just like scoops mines out of the ground.
Cool.
And then Blackout, who is a large helicopter called a Pavlo, basically.
Okay.
Cool. So all these Decepticons sat and waited on Earth until the events of the first film, where Frenzy, who was another Decepticon who turned into like a CD boombox, and then eventually he gets decapitated, but his head survives and he turns into a cell phone. Okay. He was brought to the Hoover Dam by Michaela Baines, who is Megan Fox's character from the first two films. So she cuts off his head in one of the fights with like a...
He's her cell phone or whatever. That's
exactly. Yeah. He steals her phone, transforms into it, and disposes of her old phone.
Yeah.
I think it is cool in the first movie that the Decepticons will get rid of the thing they turn into. Like, there is a line of dialogue saying that, like, when the opening sequence of the first Transformers is great. It's just a good Transformers short film. That the numbers on the side of the helicopter, the U.S. military has no idea why it's there, because it had been recorded a shot down like two months prior to it showing up. And like, yeah, man, it's 4500X on the tail. It's because Blackout had scanned the helicopter, destroyed it and killed everyone, and then took its form. So like Frenzy scans Michaela's cell phone. transforms into it, and then, or throws it away, and then transforms into it, basically.
Remember that scene where Starscream scans her bike seat, throws it away, and goes, quack, 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 and turns into her bike seat?
Yeah, it's just like a bike seat with a nose on it, basically.
It was so awkward when Daddy Megatron showed up. It was just like shows up, sees little frenzy ogling Megan Fox.
So at the beginning of the film, Blackout attacks a U.S. military base in Qatar, and he tries to hack into the network to find out where the cube and Megatron had been stored. But the staff cut the main network cable with an axe, preventing him from finishing the job. He then enacted his no witnesses policy and destroyed the entire base.
What's going on in Qatar right now? It's the World Cup?
Okay. Nothing. Yeah. Don't worry, but don't think about it.
Okay. All right. Good enough for me. Let's move on.
Yeah. Good enough for me. I'm just going to enjoy some soccer.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, like if you had 10 minutes and 10 minutes of Transformers to consume, I think the opening sequence of the first film with the Blackout attack on the military base, it's great. It's fun. There's a lot of tension. There's good pacing. There's no Shia LaBeouf, which frankly is the best part. Like any scene that doesn't have Shia LaBeouf in it is good, because I don't think I hate him, but Sam Witwicky, the character he plays, is awful. He is just a self-entitled, screaming little manlet who is mean to every single person around him. Okay. And he has no right to be Megan Fox's bike seat. Is what I
Yeah, Pete's just mad that Megan Fox ended up with him and not. Yeah. He's just watching the whole movie. Could have been me.
Yeah. So due to reused footage and some bad editing, Blackout is shown to still be in the Middle East flying over sand dunes approximately like 45 minutes before he joins the last fight, which is near Hoover Dam. So it's basically in Colorado.
Well, he flew over Antarctica. He didn't waste time.
He doesn't have any
passengers to convince that the Earth is not flat.
Michael Bay's in on it. Yeah, it's the hologram pilot. Blackout's a flat earther. Got it. The Decepticons would be, I think, personally.
Yeah. Having been to space and seen the Earth from space, of course they'd be flat earthers.
They would know.
They've seen the truth.
Yeah. So the lone Autobot who came to Earth prior to the rest of them was Bumblebee, who transformed into a yellow 1967 Chevy Camaro and later into a newer 2006 yellow Camaro.
Yeah.
And we will get into more of why he's here after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed our break as much as we did. So Shia LaBeouf's character, Sam Witwicky, tries to sell his great-great-grandfather's glasses on eBay so that he can make enough money to buy his first car. He had a deal with his dad. He was like, if you can get $2,000 and A's in high school, and $2,000, right? Or $2,000, I said that already. If you can get the money and the good grades, I will pay the other half of a car.
And also $1,000 twice.
Huh. Yes.
And also bring me 20 $100 bills.
Yeah. Huh. And 10 $200 bills. If you can find them.
If you can find them.
Is Megan Fox working on the car that he's trying to buy? Is that how he meets her?
That's afterwards. She is the high school like jocks. Not really girlfriend, because she never breaks up with him. She's just, like, his attaché, basically.
Okay.
And then, at some point, like, gets into a fight with him or something, and then Sam picks her up when he is driving his car.
Okay, yeah. Right.
And his car is, of course,
he knows how to do cars.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because her dad is a mechanic, and he's, like, in jail, of course. Mm-hmm. But her dad was a mechanic who taught her how to repair cars. So she's honestly, there's, like, a good video essay by Lindsay Ellis, who was, like, the nostalgia chick. She's just like, no, the only person who gets an arc in the Transformers films is Megan Fox. Like, like her character gets to develop. Like, her life advances. Michael Bay clearly hates the audience who he sees as a screaming manlet in Shia LaBeouf, basically. Like, Megan has... She's courageous, she's, like, industrious and creative and can repair cars and all this other... Like, all the positive aspects of, like, a fictional character go to her. And she gets an arc between the first two films, whereas Shia doesn't. Sam Witwicky does not get better at all.
Six.
Thank you. I'm waiting for that. Right. So anyway, because Sam was trying to sell his grandfather's glasses that had the coordinates of the cube on eBay, the Autobots had, I guess, been in orbit monitoring Earth's communications to see if someone would talk about the cube's location. So they discovered Sam's grandfather's glasses on eBay and then sent Bumblebee to Earth to be bought by Sam when he had to go buy his first car so that he could be protected since he had the glasses that had the coordinates of the cube on it. All right? We follow the plot of the first film so far?
Yeah, I got it. Seems so a little convoluted, but
a little bit. Eventually, Bumblebee signals the other Autobots who are in orbit. They come down, and the events of the first film occur. This would see the defeat and death of most of the Decepticons. Barricade, the cop car, frankly, probably due to bad writing, just disappears from the movie with no explanation.
Very good.
He takes, like, a turnpike at one point and is never seen again until the fifth film. All right. And Starscream, because Starscream is very cool in the first one. He transforms into a fighter jet, he takes down a bunch of other human jets, and then goes into space basically after everybody is killed. Megatron is also killed when Sam takes the life-giving cube and presses it into Megatron's chest. And this was, like, Optimus's plan the whole time. He's like, if I can't kill Megatron, I'm going to fuse the cube with my spark, which is, like, the Transformer's heart, and it'll destroy us both. I don't know why the life-giving cube, when, like, reunited with the life it created, destroys both of them and then evaporates. Doesn't matter.
Two lives but... make a death.
That's true.
Oh, that's fair, actually. Yeah. Yeah. Never mind. Yeah, that makes, that makes perfect sense. Speaking to new parent Ethan, we know that two lives do indeed make a death, right?
I can hear it coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the cube is fused with Megatron and it kills him. The US military it's a very scrappy fight. They do manage to defeat most of them, and then Starscream escapes into space. The Transformer corpses were then disposed of in the Laurentian Abyss. This is a place the movie claims is the deepest part of the ocean. It's in the Atlantic near eastern Canada. This isn't true. And even by the 1870s, it was well known that the deepest part of the ocean that we knew about was the Challenger Deep near Japan.
It's not Mariana's Trench?
Challenger Deep's at the bottom of the Mariana's Trench.
Oh. Yeah. So for some reason in this 2007 film that, you know, post-dated the 19th century explorers by, you know, hundreds of years, they still claim that the Laurentian Abyss is the is the deepest part of the ocean. And that's where they dump the Transformers' bodies.
Somebody needed to gift these writers, like, an encyclopedia before they wrote this movie.
These writers needed a Wikipedia, just, like, they just needed Google. Right? Yeah. Like,
but Google existed in 2006.
Of course it did. It's like someone needed to give it to them, right? Like, they probably wrote it in 2006. So there was, like, definitely, like, you know, like, screen recorded whatever. What was that program you could use to record your, unregistered Bandicam footage,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No idea what you're talking about. They needed to ask Jeeves, though. Jeeves could have told them.
Perhaps. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah, you know what? If they did, if they changed the location of the deepest part of the ocean, it probably would have been a popular movie. I'm just saying, it's so nobody cares. You don't have to be accurate. You just put a bunch of there's seven. You just put a bunch of those in, and everyone loves it. Yeah.
I mean, this is
exploding
the podcast
at us and exploding on the podcast here.
Yeah.
This podcast has the most explosions of any podcast ever. Right? Yep. Don't look it up, idiot.
Yeah.
Right. So, at the end of the first film, Optimus sends out a message to all Autobots that are hiding among the stars, basically, and he invites them to come to Earth since it is now safe and the Decepticons are dead. This kind of ends up serving as an explanation as to why new characters just materialize out of nowhere in subsequent films. But not every character is killed off. So in a lot of the next movies, characters just show up and everybody acts like they've been there the whole time. And other characters are gone and there is no explanation. Basically.
Cool.
I mean, it's definitely just a deal between Paramount and like auto manufacturers of just like, please put a Ferrari in the next movie. And they were just like, we've only got enough money for so much CG. So these characters that were in the previous one are no longer in this one.
Oh, is there any like grandpa, like Model T type guys that have like a really old car?
Like with an Awooga horn? There is a World War I tank in the fifth movie that lives with Anthony Hopkins.
Cool.
Good. Yeah. And he's got the little hat too and the mustache when he transforms.
They must have really got an Autobot to transform into a dump truck full of money to get Anthony Hopkins on board for the fifth Transformers movie. Holy
shit. He is like on screen more than Mark Wahlberg in the fifth movie. He's like
Mark Wahlberg's the main guy.
Yeah, that Marky I
Mark's
knew.
In four and five.
Mac yeah, Wilder.
I knew it. He took over for Shia LaBeouf. He becomes like the lead, essentially. When Shia LaBeouf went like full crazy, was after the third.
I think so.
The first time he went full crazy, because Shia's got a couple of public mental breakdowns that he's got to grapple with.
Yeah, probably. He's battling his demons. We all are.
Yeah, exactly.
It can't be easy to be a child star, too. Imagine going from Even Stevens to finding out the world just isn't so Even Stevens.
Yeah.
It's, I was going to say, his mental health makes him a really uneven Steven Jackson.
Imagine going from Even Stevens becoming Hollywood elite and finding out that the world is indeed evenly flat.
Yeah,
true.
So,
true. Yeah.
Pretty jarring.
The Autobots didn't send the Allspark. Well, does space still exist in flat Earth?
I mean, it depends which flat Earth you talk to, but no. Like,
what?
Like, it's a dome. We're in a dome. It's put up there by NASA. The stars are just lights. I think that's the prevalent, the predominant flat Earth talking point. But literally, you talk to any, let's say there's 10,000 flat Earthers in a 10-mile radius, hot flat Earthers near you. Every single one of them will tell you something different, and every single one of them will change their story the next time you talk to them. You know what I mean? Like, it'll always be slightly different tweaks on like this old thing and. The classic like Gish Gallop where you'll ask them about that and they'll say, you'll ask them about space. They'll say, no, it's a dome. You'll say, that doesn't make any sense. And then they'll say something about, you know, subterranean mole people or something.
Yeah. I love that guy who bought that really expensive, like $10,000 machine to measure the flatness of the earth or whatever. And he's like, well, I should get this measurement if it is flat and this measurement if it's round.
And then immediately doesn't, right?
Yeah, and immediately it just shows as round. He's like, well, immediately backpedaling. And,
yeah. Well, it's like a doomsday prophecy, too. Yeah. It's just the goalposts are ethereal. They've never existed. And they you set them up when you're talking, and then they disappear when you're done, basically.
Yeah. Totally.
So, speaking of conspiracies, actually, the second film, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, doesn't have like a whole lot of extra story. It is allegedly written during the writer's strike, so it was done in like a week and they started shooting it before they'd finished the script. But it does have a couple of retcons, so now we can start getting into the wild overcorrection that the already pretty flimsy plot like had in the first place.
I think established retcon is just being another Autobot, by the way, on one of our last ones, because it sounds like it could be one.
It's the third part. Yeah. You can vote Autobot, you can vote Decepticon. Yeah. Don't throw your vote away on a retcon.
Yes.
He can't win.
Yeah. Keeps changing the story.
Although that historically does really well for politicians. So.
Yeah, right. I was going to say. Yeah. Right. Yeah, but yeah, we'd be like in like a retcon fiefdom at that point. Yeah. So as it turns out, the 13 primes, which we have an episode about, it's the Primeval Transformers ones, already knew Earth existed. This retcons the first line of dialogue in the entire first movie, where Optimus claims that Earth had not been known until the cube crash landed on it. So one of the 13 primes, Megatronus, or the Fallen Prime, he's the Lucifer of the story, had come here during the Stone Age, basically, and built a machine called the Sun Harvester. This would convert our sun into Energon, which is the life-giving energy substance that Transformers live off of. That was a thing that he did. Where did he build it, though, right? He built it in Egypt. And what was built around it to hide it? It was the fucking pyramids of Giza, baby.
Oh,
a Pizza Hut.
Yeah, it was Pizza Hut.
They built a Pizza Hut on top of it.
That's the Pizza Hut bias. Gets into... or whatever, I forget what we were saying.
Yeah.
The second Transformers film, it came out in 2009 when the History Channel was, you know, like, maybe not balls deep into, but just the tip into ancient aliens. And this was like a fascinating subject that in the cultural zeitgeist. So the second film is basically just like, what if Transformers the pyramids, basically.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So not Chariots of the Gods this time. It was Revenge of the Fallen, which is the book that weird Dutch guy wrote about using magnets to build the pyramids or some shit. The Fallen would be on like Joe Rogan talking about how it's impossible for people to move limestone bricks. It was robots that did it, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. The Sun Harvester, however, required the Prime's Matrix of Leadership, which is a thing from Transformers fiction. It's this, in the 80s movie, it's like this kind of little sphere with handles on it. It plugs into Optimus's chest, and you can plug it into other Transformers chests as well. And if they're deemed worthy, they can become a Prime. Like in the 80s movie, Hot Rod becomes Rodimus Prime, which is a stupid fucking name. Yeah.
Rodimus Prime. That's
great. Yeah, man. I mean, there's no Rodimus Prime if I get too drunk.
Sorry.
Eight.
Yeah, that's eight. Yeah.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you locked me out for a second when you didn't immediately say that was eight.
No, I'm keeping track of it. So the Sun Harvester required a Prime's Matrix of Leadership to be activated. However, since there was life on Earth at the time, the 12 non-evil Primes fused their physical bodies together to hide the Matrix from the Fallen. I'd like for you guys to guess, where did they hide the Matrix from the Fallen?
Okay, so it came out of the pyramids, is what we're saying?
The Sun Harvester was inside of the largest pyramid of Giza.
I'm saying Stonehenge.
Okay.
Pyramids again.
Yeah, so Jamie's way closer. The Matrix of Leadership was basically hidden just in the desert, like 40 minutes away from the pyramids of Giza.
Okay. Oh, cool. Cool,
yeah,
cool, cool.
These spacefaring robots who have godlike powers because they're primeval Transformers didn't take it off the planet or even on the fucking moon or throw it into the ocean. They took it just down the road and killed themselves to protect it.
Yeah. And they're like, honestly, way easier to hide when they don't have those giant pyramids on top of them.
Yeah.
You put it in the sand, like, who's going to go look in the sand? You know, like.
Or it's like one of those fucking, like, it's like a gun safety VHS. They basically put it on, like, a shelf, so like, hoping a toddler wouldn't bring it to school.
Yeah.
So the Fallen, after being defeated by the other Primes and, like, cast away from his, like, pyramid project, hid, seemingly, it's never said where he hid, but, like, Saturn's in the footage in the movie. He hid on one of the moons of Saturn and just kind of waited the entire time. Since Earth was under the protection of the Primes, and only a Prime can defeat another Prime, basically.
Okay.
Right. This doesn't make any fucking sense at all, because all the Primes killed themselves to hide the Matrix from him down the street from, or, like, they put the, whatever, they put the Prime on the, they put the Matrix on a top shelf and took the little stepladder away.
I mean, yep. If a Prime kills himself, it's still a Prime killing a Prime, right?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Except for the fact that Optimus Prime arrived on Earth in 2007. So he has been hiding from nobody for like 12,000 years. It's just like chilling on Titan for some reason.
Oh yeah. They would pretend to kill themselves so that I would put my guard down, come to Earth. They could all ambush me, huh? Yeah, they would.
Yeah. The fallen Megatron has spent $10,000 on a machine that detects whether or not there are primes on Earth, and then ran it once, realized it gave him the wrong result, and then just like sat on Saturn for the rest of his life.
Nice.
So Transformers don't really age or die of old age unless like their character design has to change. So he just like could have done it himself, right? Like he could have gone back to Earth at any point. And the Prime, or the Fallen, rather, he's one of the Primes in the movie. He has like psychic powers. He can teleport and he has like telekinesis and shit. Jeez. He doesn't actually transform in the movie, but he can do like crazy other shit because he's basically the Transformers equivalent of a demigod.
Cool.
Yeah. So he's just like kind of just like sat there and waited the entire time. So eventually at the end of the film, Optimus, who was brought back to life by the Matrix that they found on the top shelf in the closet, he's killed. If you also look at Transformers Forest Battle, that's another good little Transformers short film if you ever want to. Mm-hmm. Optimus is combined with Jetfire, who is a different Transformer who gets wounded, and then when he dies, he uses his parts to give Optimus like bigger guns and a jetpack. He destroys the Sun Harvester and then kills the Fallen. Optimus pulls off the Fallen's face and then punches through his back to grab and crush his spark like he's Sub-Zero, basically. Cool. And this has been commented on by other people, but Optimus, after getting killed in the second film and being brought to life, comes back as an absolute lunatic. Like, he is a... he kills people with his bare hands to the point where this other podcast called Mr. Sunday Movies that was talking about it was just like, oh no, like, his catchphrase is just, I'll kill you. Optimus Prime.
That's a cool one.
He point blank executes multiple other Transformers throughout the series and kills a Transformer called Shockwave in the third film, who is a Cyclops, by punching into his throat and pulling out his single eye.
Oh my god.
Yeah. It's
gruesome.
The fact that they're not human, the violence in the Transformers films is bananas. Like, a lot of them, for some reason, don't have guns. They have, like, swords and buzzsaw hands and shit like that. Damn. But other times, like, they literally pull each other apart.
Doesn't count if there's no blood.
That's
true. Or explosions.
Nine.
Yep, nine.
Well, there's definitely explosions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cars
explode.
Cars explode.
Yeah, that's how they run.
Do cars explode?
They run on explosions.
They do run on tiny explosions.
That's true. Okay, yeah. So the third film, Dark of the Moon, adds even more happy coincidences. Turns out, Sentinel Prime, the Prime who had trained Optimus, tried to flee the war on Cybertron along with multiple devices called Pillars, who, when arranged and activated properly, will open something called a space bridge so that they could like pull through Cybertron to another planet, strip mine it, and use the resources to repair their destroyed planet.
Make more cars! Exactly. Make more 16-lane highways. Through Dallas.
Yeah. You gotta go down to the tire mines.
We're just melting some tires over here.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do to tires? You vulcanize them. Vulcan's another planet, huh? Think about it.
Oh, yeah. Also, yeah. I don't know if you know this and made that reference just like by sheer coincidence, but Leonard Nimoy voices Sentinel Prime in the third movie.
Oh.
Who is a Vulcan.
Completely coincidence.
Cool.
I assure you. I haven't seen the third one. I've definitely confirmed at this point that there's no way I've seen it.
Yeah. It's good. It's the other good one. I like
you,
one and three.
You said
like
National Treasure was good, and you said the first Transformers was good, so I don't trust your opinion anymore, Peter.
Yeah. I like it.
I'm sure, say I, that. I'm sure you do. Saying it's good is entirely different.
I like it and it's good are two different things. You're right. I'll give you that one. I'll put in a little 10th explosion for that there. You get that.
Thank you. Now, peace.
So at the beginning of the third movie, it shows that the ship, which is called the Ark, is being shot down and disabled while trying to leave Cybertron. This means that it just drifted blindly for like hundreds of millions of football fields until conveniently crashing on Earth's moon in 1961.
Cool.
The detection of the crash of the ship is what led to the Soviet-U.S. space race.
Okay. Oh.
Okay. So, this was kept secret from Optimus and the other Autobots within the film. Optimus is very disappointed that the U.S. government kept secrets from him. How dare they?
Yeah.
So, after finding out The Autobots go to the moon, and Sentinel was recovered and brought back to Earth by the Autobots and reactivated with the Matrix's leadership. He, however, had previously made a deal with Megatron, like thousands and thousands of years ago on Cybertron. Since the Autobots were losing the war, he made a deal with Megatron that he would go to another planet with his space bridge and, you know, open that so that they could strip mine the resources. So the whole thing was just an entire, it was just all politics, basically.
It was all a psyop.
Yeah. I like Sentinel Prime as a character. I think the idea of the good guy kind of turned bad for political reasons, like making shady deals, thinking he's doing the right thing, is an interesting arc. Doesn't happen in the movie, obviously, because it's a Michael Bay film. But I think it's like, that's another one of those like tiny kernels, another little plastic dinosaur bone in the brick that is just like, fuck, man. Like, he would be a great, like, Breaking Bad anti-hero of, like, if you had a Transformers show about Sentinel Prime.
Yeah.
Eventually, you know, like, accepting the military-industrial complex and befriending Megatron in an effort to save the planet, basically.
We don't get that, though. There's no arcs, only sparks.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the arc is a ship, actually.
Peter wants to see, like, a highly intelligent, like, autonomous car who just ends up making leaded gasoline in a trailer out in the desert.
Yes.
Right?
And in a Winnebago, which is also also in itself is a Transformer.
Nice.
So in the film, Megatron states that Sentinel was meant to rendezvous with him on Earth, but fate had waylaid them both. And this just isn't true, because Sentinel's ship was shot down while it was leaving Cybertron. So he made a political backdoor deal with Megatron, who did not tell his own forces, like, hey, this one, that guy is going to win us the war. Don't shoot him out of the sky. Because the beginning of the third film shows him being shot down within the atmosphere of Cybertron. He doesn't even make it across. He doesn't even get to turn on his blinkers and turn left. He's just out. They light him up immediately. He just didn't tell anyone that that was the plan. Yeah. Fate, or as I call it, bad writing, saw Sentinel crash onto Earth's moon, orbiting the planet where the cube had already landed, and the same planet where the Fallen had tried to build the Sun Harvester, basically.
He crashed into the moon? It's Breaking Bad, but breaking like the brakes. He didn't break very
bad
good.
Breaking.
He didn't break good. Bad
breaking, exactly.
So after sealing off Chicago, Cybertron was partially teleported close to Earth. But when the pillars are deactivated and the portal starts to close, the planet starts to collapse in on itself, basically destroying Cybertron like as a whole. Optimus, known sane diplomat, then kills both Megatron and Sentinel Prime. Megatron he kills by hitting him in the face with an axe and then like over the shoulder pulling the axe out and like decapitating Megatron and peeling out his entire like spine, basically. And then he does a classic freedom is right of all sentient beings Optimus move by point blank executing Sentinel Prime by shooting him in the head with Megatron's shotgun.
Cool.
Good.
Yeah. So we're getting towards the end here. The fourth film does not add much, except that the Transformers had, say it with me now, already come to Earth at some point in prehistory. But this time, they used...
Again, you mean?
Yeah.
I
guess this would be the furthest into the past that they've been to Earth, because what they were doing was using these things called seeds to kind of like bomb the surface of the Earth and convert it into an element that humans call transformium. It's like the metal that they're made out of, which is why it's like very fluid. It's why they can transform. And there's like a bunch of dinosaurs in the opening sequence of the fourth film.
It's the Jimmy Neutron meme where like Sheen is like, oh, this is the seventh time you've brought first time Transformers visited Earth to class. Show and tell.
Basically. This is the earliest one, because this one now is like 100 million years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we here? So despite apparently now being here for thousands of years, the Earth government, mostly the U.S., blamed the Transformers for all the conflict of the previous films. So an organization called Cemetery Wind, which is set up by the U.S., has the purpose of hunting down and killing Transformers, like whether they're good or evil. So they also, like, one of the first scenes in that one is they're killing one of the Autobots they kill the ambulance Ratchet, the medic, from the first three movies. They kill him. They're taken and broken down, kind of recycled into Transformium by a Chinese company called KSI. And KSI is then using recycled Transformers parts to create Transformers, but they're drones, basically.
I mean,
like, that's the purpose. They also have, like, Megatron.
They're robotic robots, is what we're saying.
Exactly.
Just taking their free will. They're slaves, I guess, right? You're just taking their free will away. They think the same way. They exist the same way.
The transformations for the drones in the fourth film are also, like, they don't transform. They, like, dissolve into a bunch of flying cubes and reform from, like, vehicle to robot.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of lame, actually.
Yeah, it's just at the point where it's just getting so far off.
It's just magic at this point. Yeah. They might as well just, like, turn into a cloud of mist and reappear as a Lamborghini, basically.
A cloud of bats reappear as Dracula. Like.
Yeah.
How do they even sell the toys for that one? It's just like a pile of cubes they sell you and a drone. And you.
Well, I have a bunch of the.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of the Studio Series Transformers that I've been, like, slowly collecting. I don't have anything from the fourth movie because since there isn't a transformation in the film, the toys are terrible. Because the fact that they don't have any car parts on them when they're a robot means most of the toy is just, like, obviously they don't give you a pile of cubes, right? They have, like, the vehicle form, but the transformation is just, like, basically a shell where you just, like, you stand up a car and open up the back and fold it on and there's just a robot inside. Like, none of the parts, none of the cool engineering, nothing, because there's no like, you know, like, Megatron's new form doesn't have wheels on it because he just turns into bats and comes back and is Dracula, right? Like yeah. that's the problem with it.
The series really turned into bats at a certain,
yeah, I mean, Shia LaBeouf dissolved into a cloud of bats and reformed as Mark Wahlberg, as we know. Yeah, so Cemetery Wind also has Galvatron, makes Galvatron, because they had Megatron's body from the third movie. Megatron was apparently still alive in some capacity, or, like, backed up into his own little, like, I guess Transformers have a black box or something, because they kept trying to remake him and make him look like Optimus. And Stanley Tucci's character is very mad that the robot they're making is too evil.
Ooh. Okay.
Like, it just looks too evil. So anyway, yeah, I mean, you just can't, like, but again, they're just building fucking transforming drones. So he's just like, you just can't blow up a wedding in this economy anymore. What the fuck? Yeah. Like, what's going on here?
I don't want our machines that blow up weddings to look evil.
Come exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why the U.S. military's drones are all black, right? So you can't see the angry eyebrows. They just can't seem to get off.
Exactly. Yeah.
They just make them look like doves now. So when they release the doves for the wedding, it just turns into drones.
On the subject of conspiracies, birds aren't real is like, bird is an acronym for basic information recording device.
Yeah. I love that one. And there's a whole thing.
Yeah. I love it. It's like, it's a backronym, right? Like, it's all like, because the birds aren't real conspiracy is a fake one, I think. Or it started as a fake one. It might have taken roost, if you
there's
will.
There's a YouTube video of, like, one of these guys who's organizing all the get togethers and stuff. And he really believes it.
I do believe that people
Someone
have bought
does.
Into it, but yeah. I think, and I'm basing this on nothing. Maybe it's just so ridiculous that I've always assumed. But
there's like,
I thought it started on Reddit as like a silly subreddit.
It could have been, and then there started, like, he has a girlfriend too who wasn't in on this whole birds aren't real. She didn't believe it, but she's like, oh well, we just kind of. I got to know him, and I really liked him. Then he told me birds aren't real, and we're still together. And it's like, how
honestly,
can you,
like,
deal
White
with
White Lady? The most pillable people on the planet. Like, I definitely mentioned when I started listening to QAA, I was, like, listening to it in the car with Dara, right? When we were together, it was, like, the Wayfair conspiracy, where Wayfair is smuggling children to different elite pedophiles. And when they were talking about the, like, setup behind it, it was just like, whatever, they were just like, oh yeah, all these kids have disappeared, blah blah blah, like 20,000 kids a year. And she's like, oh my god, that's terrible. I'm like, you're an idiot, it's fake. It's not true.
And the podcast is about being fake too. It's not even about telling like the real story.
No, of course not. It's a debunking yeah. It's a debunking podcast, right? Yeah, and she was like, oh my god, I can't believe that's happening. I'm like, it isn't. That's why white ladies on Facebook.
According to the New York Times, who claims Peter McIndoe is the creator of the Birds Aren't Real viral movement.
That's me.
It's supposed to be apparently fake. It's fake, and it's now he claims a movement to like combat like QAnon conspiracy theorists with like just out lunatic them essentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it's helping anything.
Yeah,
but...
we've been playing chicken with lunatics for a few too many years at this point.
You can't outcrazy them. That's the problem.
No, you cannot. Yeah,
it's an arms race. You just don't win. No.
Actually, I heard everything becomes not real unless you become a Lore Boys patron. So
that's true.
Get to the patreon.com/loreboys. And
reality is ending, people. So you better get going. Better get your subscription going before reality ends.
We've got all your flat earth. We've got all your birds. Anything need right there on the Patreon tier.
Yep. Uh-huh.
The earth is round. It's just deflated at the moment.
We've got to blow it up. Yeah. And it's inside a dome to keep us safe.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, beautiful. So, Cemetery Wind, I guess coming back here. Cemetery Wind was in cahoots with a Cybertronian bounty hunter named Lockdown. A bounty had been placed on Optimus Prime by the Quintessons, who we do talk about in an older episode, who are the alien race who actually created the Transformers as the slave race of robots, right. Basically. Like, so KSI are the second people to make... make wedding drones, basically. Yeah. The Quintessons made the original wedding drone.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. If his dialogue wasn't so bad, Lockdown would be a great villain because, again, it's another little plastic dinosaur bone down in the fucking dirt where the third-party bounty hunter who hates the Decepticons, hates the Autobots, he's just there for a paycheck, basically, and he's just, like, cleaning up the mess that, like, a nonsensical war that has lasted at this point thousands of years has caused, basically.
Yeah.
So, and another cool detail is, like, Autobots in the films, all their eyes are blue, all the Decepticons' eyes are red. Lockdown's eyes are green, which is a neat kind of artistic detail, like, very deep in there.
In the car world, that means go.
That's true.
Yeah. Red means stop, blue means slow down, green means go, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Me, colorblind, and I don't wear my glasses in my car. That's how I do it.
Yeah, and that's how you get killed by a drone from a Transformer. So
yeah, exactly. So with the help of Marky Mark Wahlberg, Lockdown and Cemetery Wind are defeated. And our final and very brief retcon here comes from the fifth film, The Last Night, and we did touch on it earlier. As it happens, Transformers knights, like, and they look like they're made of kind of like degraded copper. That, again, the character design in the fifth film is great. The kind of ancient Cybertronians look very cool. Transformers knights were on Earth in the 5th century and gave Merlin, real guy, a staff that could control a mechanical 3-headed dragon called Dragonstorm, which helped King Arthur, which we have an episode about, who is not a real man, defeat the Anglo-Saxons.
Cool.
Also, a secret Illuminati, like...
Did King Arthur fight the Anglo-Saxons, or did he fight the Romans?
He's not real. Allegedly, he's like an Anglo-Roman guy.
Okay.
Yeah. And the Anglo-Saxons were the barbarians of whatever. The barbarians of this episode, basically. So also, a secret kind of like Illuminati Freemason society that Anthony Hopkins works for in the fifth movie was set up after Archibald Witwicky discovered Megatron in the Arctic, and they started calling themselves the Witwickians. And I think in the fifth film, they like Anthony Hopkins has like a fucking portrait of Shia LaBeouf in his office, and it's like on the like Cybertronian round table that he has in his like gigantic... In like gigantic British estate, where that's where the World War One tank Transformer is as well. Who does not say anything. He transforms and like kind of bumbles around. It's just like
Bumblebee.
Wouldn't it be neat if there were Transformers in World War One? This is what they would look like, sort of thing.
Exactly.
Finally, in the fifth film, Transformers: The Last Night, which no one should watch. It is over 3 hours long, one of the most convoluted and stupid films I've ever seen in my life. Megatron is no longer Galvatron, right? He is no longer made of Transformium. He just inexplicably calls himself Megatron again and once again turns into some kind of alien spaceship. He's just an evil robot who turns into nothing, basically.
Love it.
Just because.
Yeah, just because he's just back. So yeah, finally it turns out Earth isn't even a planet, guys. Turns out the reason all these previous plot contrivances that we've had have been centered on Earth is because Earth is actually the gigantic and dormant body of Unicron, the transforming planet villain, like basically, I mean, other than, I guess, the Fallen, the Transformers universe's version of Satan, I guess, because he is like the destroyer of the universe.
Earth is Satan, and, just like in our universe.
And you called it out unknowingly earlier, Ethan, so there's two for two, or two for this episode, that Unicron is reactivated, ancient alien style, by bringing Merlin's staff to Stonehenge.
Oh, boy.
You knew it was going to have factor somewhere. They're dealing with pyramids. Yeah. Stonehenge is number two on that list.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's it. That is the mess that is the Michael Bay Transformers. And I have been your host, Peter O'Donohue. You can find me at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. The first five pages... Well, not the first five pages, but five pages of my comic are currently available over there. If you want to check it out, they're in black and white. And otherwise, get into Discord, which is linked below. Lads?
Yeah, I agree. Discord. That's where we hang out.
There is a Discord link below. If you guys want to do us a favor and tweet about us or share us on Facebook or put us out on social media, we'd appreciate it. You could also just tell people you know about us or leave us reviews on iTunes. It means a lot to the show and to the show's numbers and how we do. And we'd appreciate it. And we thank you for it. And if you guys want to support the show financially, Peter mentioned it, or Jamie mentioned it earlier, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where you can support the show and keep the lights on. And we give you like a few bonuses, like the loser titles and the script and the bonus audio and almost a year's worth of bonus audio. So if you want to check it out, patreon.com/theloreboys for that.
Yep.
And we did mention it earlier, reality is ending. Of course, 2023, just like the Mayans predicted, reality is going to just untether itself. Luckily, we found a loophole. We do need some Loreboys primers out there to help us out with making sure that the pyramids are activated, that Stonehenge has got its staff. So if you guys could just take your staff out to Stonehenge, take your staff out at Stonehenge, that'd be great. You know, if there's any like weird rocks near you too, just go like pray near them and give us money through Loreboys Premium, $79.99 a month. And we're pretty sure that you'll be good once reality ends. So you should be fine, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, one last thing. That's 10, baby.
Oh, it's 11. I tossed one in there.
Well, yeah, you're not allowed to steal my explosion. That's a James. Okay,
yeah, that's an explosion, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on. And you tried to steal his 10th explosion, too. That's like so presumptuous of you. That's it. Lore boys transforming. What is that noise? Is that like a noise? I have the added legal defense of not having a brother who's going to air my criminal offense on the internet.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.